Cleopatra, virgin births, and professional scribes. More about antiquity. Written by Bart Ehrman. Read by Ken Teutsch. Here are three more excellent questions I have received from blog readers, all of them both interesting and important. Question. I recently came across a rather bold and curious linguistic claim regarding the term paraclete within the Gospel of John, and I was hoping to ask your opinion of it. To be exact, it theorizes that the word parakletos may be translated as praised in excess over or glorified in excess over. Apparently, according to this claim, the word kleos translates to glory or renown. An example cited to support this theory is the Queen Cleopatra, whose name is the Latinized form of the ancient Greek Cleopatra, meaning glory of her father, derived from kleos, meaning glory, and pater, meaning father. So according to this theory, if we adopt the meaning of praise or glory, then the verbal adjective kletos can be translated as praised or glorified. The resultant alternative literal translation apparently renders parakletos as praised more than, in excess over, or glorified more than, in excess over. If I may ask, in your academic opinion, as a biblical scholar and as a colleague of the late Bruce Metzger, does this theory have linguistic validity? Any clarification would be immensely welcome, and I am truly so sorry for bothering you. Response. Is the person who claims this an expert in ancient Greek? That would be interesting. So far as I know, the word is never used that way in Greek. It comes from the verb parakleo, which means to call to your side, and almost always the verb means to call someone over to help, either as an advocate, an intercessor, or an encourager. It, the verb, can mean to cheer up, encourage, comfort, console, summon, or support, but it doesn't mean to praise in excess. So too, the noun paraclete means someone who is called to assist, for example, as a legal assistant or advocate in court. So, no, I don't think it can mean, well, at least that it ever does mean, praised in excess over. I think this person's confusion may come from a false etymology. Parakleo and parakletes derive from the verb kaleo, to call. They do not come from the verb kleo, which means to celebrate. The words do look similar, but they are not related etymologically. Question. We have all heard of the prophecies in the Hebrew Bible that have been attributed to Jesus. Although scholars state that Isaiah 7:14 actually reads, "A young woman has conceived," apologists argued that the Hebrew word for young woman can also mean virgin, and some have referred to other verses outside of this example in which the same young woman word in Hebrew is used when referring to a virgin. One example, I believe, was used with Sarah, possibly. Anyway, are there other examples where that term is used and was actually referring to someone understood to be a virgin? Response. It very much depends what you mean by can also mean. There is a Hebrew word for woman who has never had sex, betula, and that is not the word used in Isaiah 7:14. The word that is used there normally means young woman, alma, and applies to a young woman independently of whether she has had sex yet or not. If she is very young and not married yet, the normal assumption is that she has not had sex, hence it can refer to a woman who has not had sex. If she's a young woman who has had sex, she still is a young woman, alma. The other big issue is what the verse says about the woman in relation to her being pregnant. It does not say she will become pregnant, but that she already is. It uses the perfect tense for conceived. That will require some explaining. Hebrew doesn't have verbal tenses like English: past, present, future, perfect, past perfect, future perfect, etc. Its main tenses are perfect for actions that are already completed and imperfect for those that are not yet completed, whether in the past, present, or future. By using the perfect tense here, it indicates that the woman is already pregnant, a completed action, not that she is going to be. And when you read the entire chapter, that's the point. She's pregnant, perfect tense. She will give birth, imperfect tense. And before the child is very old, the problem confronting the king Ahaz, to whom Isaiah is speaking, will have disappeared. Question. Not a challenge, just a quibble from someone with no specialist knowledge, but surely the fact the disciples were Aramaic speakers who were almost certainly uneducated and illiterate would make them more likely to rely on some kind of professional help than highly erudite figures like Cicero. There may be little or no evidence of full-time secretaries composing finished works around an outline provided by an ostensible author. But isn't there clear evidence of people working in public spaces as professional letter writers? Response. Yes, if, since, the disciples were illiterate, that would seem to make them more likely to depend on professional writers. If there were professional writers like that who composed writings for those who were illiterate. There certainly were professional writers, and illiterate people did sometimes have recourse to them, to record a land deed or a divorce certificate or some other document. But we have no record of professional writers who produced full compositions, poetry, philosophical essays, religious treatises, or whatever. The writings of the New Testament are that sort of thing, narratives and extended epistles dealing with significant religious, philosophical, historical issues. The ancient professional writers, who did produce personal letters, were hired to take dictation for brief one-page letters, which were highly formulaic, and legal documents, such as land deeds, divorce certificates, legal disputes, etc. Never do we hear of lengthy letters that provide detailed guidance, instruction, exhortation, correction, or comparable things being produced by a secretary amanuensis. The closest thing to these New Testament epistles are such works as the letters of Seneca to Lucius, which themselves are nowhere near as extensive as most of the New Testament writings. But none of these was composed by another person, a scribe or professional writer, and we hear of no such thing being produced for someone who was illiterate. What we do have, on the other hand, are scores of examples of people writing letters claiming to be a famous person, knowing full well they are someone else.